Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. The weekly wrap on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3. Good morning. It's the Breakfast Huddle. Elliot Danka, Bharati Jagdish, and Ryan Huang. This week's headline of the week, all about the Bloomberg New Economy Forum. I believe it wraps up today.
Yes, indeed. It is seeing about 300 international business and government leaders. They descended on Sentosa Island's Ritzy Capella Hotel. And on day one already, several important issues were discussed as Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong sat down with Bloomberg's editor-in-chief, John Micklethwaite. Now, the issues range from Singapore's reopening plans to political succession. And to give us an analysis of those topics, we're joined now by Nicholas Fung, Managing Director, Black Dot, and Director for Security and Global Affairs at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, guys. Good to speak with you.
Now, Nick, clearly the reopening plans in light of COVID-19 made the headlines. And now, let's talk about that situation for a moment. Our endemic strategy, of course, we all know has been marred over the last few months due to high case numbers. At the point we are at right now, should the focus still be on this specific strategy, some are asking in light of PM Lee's comments, because some might disagree, does this situation really reflect endemic conditions?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think that opinion is split quite evenly when we look across, sort of dipstick surveys in society. So there are people who are a little bit concerned that we are opening up and treating the virus as endemic. And there are those who are, definitely more pro a faster opening up and a resumption of as close to business as usual kind of situation. So I think the science is showing that, it's to adopt the eradication kind of strategy is very, very hard and probably impossible to sustain in the longer term. No country has managed to do it against any sort of disease in the long term. And I think if you've seen look at countries around the world, there are a few who started out with aiming for this kind of eradication strategy, New Zealand and others, of course. China is still kind of the only one that's holding out. Everybody else has accepted that we have to move to some level of endemicity if we want to resume, any kind of normalcy or approaching what we used to see before the pandemic. And for Singapore, I think, it's really hard for us to adopt the eradication strategy if we even wanted to do so, because that would require us to be 100% isolated, right? We have to keep the borders closed. We have to basically clamp down and lock down any time we saw any sort of outbreak or cluster forming. And that's really hard for a small but open economy like ours. Not to mention, obviously what could be the human cost that Prime Minister Lee mentioned at the Bloomberg New Economic Forum. If we keep trying to lock down and keep the virus at almost zero cases, which we should manage to do at the start, it's really, really tough for people, and I think that we have to be very, very wary and cognizant of that.
Yeah. Obviously, size does matter. Size of your economy is one factor. Some are faster, some are slower. Your thoughts on the step-by-step, how it's been criticized that we're a little bit slow and the impact it'll have on our economy. In your opinion, are we well-placed?
Actually, this step-by-step issue, right, or the issues that people have with this step-by-step strategy, I can fully understand it. When we went into the obviously super awkwardly named phases, right, so the phase two heightened alert and then slightly evolving into stabilization phase, I got to the point where I was also a little bit puzzled because I'm quite self-sufficient. I think my wife and I, we're perfectly happy to spend time in Singapore. We are very lucky that we enjoy doing various things or just watching Netflix. So I think we were quite lucky in that sense. But even after 2 years, it started to wear a little bit thin. I think you guys might have felt it too, that, when is it ever going to end? And why are the steps so small and so incremental? Mm. But listening to the point of view of the various leaders, PM, and of course, elaborated by the head of the ministerial task force, Minister Lawrence Wong, talking about how we want to avoid, many U-turns, right? One step forward, two steps back. One step forward, two steps back. So they rather take half step forward and not have to go back, half step forward and not have to go back. And I think psychologically, we also have to bear in mind that the impact of multiple lockdowns, lockdown open, lockdown open, can be very, very significant on people just because of the uncertainty. So even though we're doing small step by steps, small step by small step, in a sense, it creates a certain amount of certainty that we are moving in one direction, albeit a little bit slowly, but hopefully we don't have to go backwards. And I think some of the points that have been made of why we're taking this step-by-step thing is the notion that we're trying new things. So, for example, we've been talking about the VTLs, the vaccination travel lanes that are being extended to more and more countries. And I think we do need to see the impact of the VTLs when you have more people coming in. Thankfully, for now, very, very low number of cases originating from travelers coming through the VTLs. With fingers crossed, it stays that way. And of course, if we're talking about new variants of COVID-19, again, the science doesn't seem to suggest that there will be anything worse than what we're seeing with the Delta variant. But I think, you know, a wait-and-see approach. It's good to remind ourselves that it's been less than 2 years that we've been dealing with COVID-19. So what we actually know about the virus isn't anywhere close to our understanding of the major diseases that could impact us.
That's a brilliant answer, but I thought you were going to say, as long as you can play golf, you're happy already.
I didn't want to say that, but that is true.
Authenticity at every level. Well, the other issue that was brought up was Singapore's wealth tax. And since golf is quite closely associated with wealthy people, I'm sure this sparked the interest of a lot of golfers. This has been discussed off and on over the last few years. During the interview, the Prime Minister said that efforts to ease inequalities through wealth taxes actually do face challenges. There are challenges in terms of ensuring fairness. There are also risks to competitiveness. And we know that in some other countries, high admin costs, high capital flight risks, the inability to redistribute funds well have also put a spanner in the works when it comes to this issue. How can the Singapore government work around this in terms of designing it so that it doesn't have these detrimental effects?
Yeah, that's a very good point and a very complex question. And I think that, Prime Minister Lee already alluded to some of the challenges that are being faced. It's true, it's been raised a number of times over the years. And I think recently in the recent Parliament sitting in November, it was also raised yet again about the notion of how our taxation can become more suited for a dynamic and fair 21st century economy. So the suggestion was for a wealth tax to be introduced between 0.5% to 2% of those with a net wealth in excess of $10 million. That's actually quite a low bar. If you look at countries like the US, where they've also been having this debate, the wealth tax has to be applied to billionaires in that sense. And so I think it does raise a question. You know, when unfortunately it's a hard truth that is a hard fact of life, that when you talk about people with money to invest or people who want to base themselves, high net worth individuals who want to base themselves in various countries around the world, the tax calculation will of course come in as a significant factor. And it's no surprise and it's no secret that Singapore has always prided itself, among other things, of having a very competitive tax proposition for businesses and for individuals as well. And that's a way to keep the interest in Singapore. I mean, you know, as nice as Sentosa and Capella is, there are other resort islands in the world that, you know, high net worth individuals would potentially want to go to. There are other business and financial centers, Dubai, Hong Kong, all around the world that are very, very aggressively courting the same individuals that we would like to have here, the same businesses and the same, you know, international HQs that we would like to see here. So, you know, in a generic sense, the taxation issue is something that is very important. There have been suggestions, of course, that we need to move away from the notion that low tax offers the most competitive advantage for Singapore. I wouldn't say that that's necessarily a bad thing, but I think how to do that would be a major issue. And I think that Singapore is definitely watching the international decision to implement universal corporate tax fixed at a particular level for all countries a little bit carefully. So when you mention this notion of how to manage a tax system well, I think Singapore has always maintained that the tax system should be progressive, like helping to reduce inequality by effecting some measures of wealth transfer. And the way that it has tried to make sure that this is effected and that the lower income groups are not unduly impacted by the tax system is by the tax regulations, but also by other levers, including, grants and subsidies. We're talking about the GST tax that is supposed to be implemented sometime soon. We have a $6 billion assurance package to cushion the impact of the GST hike from 7 to 9%, as well as the GST voucher system. So I think the country looks at taxation very seriously, but there are also other levers they can put in place to help the lower income groups to cushion any effect. And then if we talk about the top end of the spectrum, if at some stage a wealth tax is implemented, I think there are other levers it can pull too, you know, making it more competitive for people to set up businesses here, to give incentives if they were to site their regional HQs or tech R&D centers here as well. So there are a range of levers that the government typically pulls, but at the same time, I think they approach any amendment to the taxation system with a lot of caution because, as I sort of mentioned, it can have a big impact on the country.
The issue of political succession, the Bloomberg editor-in-chief is saying that choosing the next prime minister looks a little bit like the Squid Game. Ooh, player 001 versus player 002. Lawrence Wong and Ong Ye Kung. I think a lot of people really would like to know, and if they could to talk to our Prime Minister, would ask, so how are you choosing your successor? What's your opinion of this question and what PM Lee is doing?
I think it's a fair question. I think there are a lot of eyes on Singapore's succession. Obviously, it's an interesting scenario. People should bear in mind that we haven't had that many elections. We are still a very, very young country. But most of the past elections have been very sort of orderly, and the transition has been very smooth, I would say. And in this particular case, as you mentioned, two candidates, I'm not so sure if we should cut it right down to two already. I think that we're still quite a long ways out from the next election. And Prime Minister Lee has said he would lead the team into and past the next election before we look at a transition. PM Lee has also made it very clear that the 4G, fourth generation political leaders in Singapore, the entire team will decide the next PM. It's not actually down to one person making a choice. Mm. So, you know, whether it's his decision, whether it's a Squid Game kind of thing, I think the question was asked in the context of who is helming the COVID efforts in Singapore.
Yeah.
PM said it's not a beauty contest. And I think we should bear in mind this is a genuine global crisis and lives and livelihoods are at stake. So if we're just looking at this as a bellwether for who is going to be the next PM, I think we're overlooking the fact that we, as PM said, require the best people at the helm to deal with this. And if the best people aren't the ones in the running for the next PM, then it's very, very strange thing. So, you know, I would say that, yeah, let's not limit it to just the usual suspects, the names that you mentioned, but there might be dark horses. You know, here Minister Desmond Lee, Minister Edwin Tong, Minister Chan Chun Sing, you know, these are all the high profile leaders for the fourth generation. And I think the next 2 to 3 years, hopefully, we get a bit more clarity before the next election. But it's way too early to say, oh, you know, let's look at what we're doing now and identify the front runner. I think it's way too early for that.
If anything, COVID has taught us not to bank on predictability, yeah? Thank you very much for that, Nick. Nicholas Fung, Managing Director, Black Dot, and Director for Security and Global Affairs at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Thanks for joining us on Money FM 89.3. You stay safe and take care.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.